Hello, everybody. My name is Adam Wilkie, and I'm very happy to be here in my home state of Minnesota to be talking about communicating climate science for agricultural decision support. On behalf of my co-author, Dr. Lois Wright-Morton, thank you for taking the time to be here. And I'm going to dovetail on a lot of what Dr. Prokopy just said regarding the role of social science in communicating our aggregated agronomic and climate science and how it advances and how producers accept or not different components of the project in decision support. So if you're fortunate to see Dr. Ramaswamy's opening keynote on Sunday night, you know that the message is important and what communication scientists refer to as framing or sort of how our messages are contextualized in different social situations is very important to how science is communicated. So that includes things about who's conveying the message. We know trust in information sources is very important. The sources that they provide in their messages are also very important, and also the words that they use and the words that they choose not to use in conveying this message, and how that actually connects to actions on the landscape. So I'll be reporting today on some data gained from surveys and interviews with state extension climatologists in the region, and this is just one illustrative quotation. The information, even if it's researched, it has to be disseminated to the public, and that's always the challenge. Dr. Ramaswamy also mentioned on Sunday night what he called this anti-science attitude and how we're having trouble, especially in terms of climate science and actually conveying that science to the public for decision making. So as Dr. Prokopy mentioned, historical and future information is incredibly underutilized by the farming population. We see about 25% of the farmers reporting moderate or strong influence of annual and longer term outlooks in their decision making. This is a similar data to what Dr. Prokopy just presented, but I just want to highlight the fourth box there. There is not sufficient evidence to know with certainty whether climate change is occurring or not. So when we surveyed the farmers in 2012, 31% of the farming population reported that there's not sufficient evidence to know with certainty whether climate change is occurring or not. And so we know in social scientists that belief precedes action, and belief is significantly influences behaviors. And so if farmers are not believing that there's sufficient evidence about climate change, that is an incredible barrier to actually utilizing climate science for decision-making processes. So the data that I'm going to be presenting today are from surveys and interviews of climatologists in the North Central region. And these are incredibly valuable stakeholders in disseminating, well, both creating, producing, and disseminating climate science to the agricultural community. They represent land-grant extension, state departments of agriculture, and regional climate centers. And the question content in these surveys and interviews were specifically regarding their perceptions of how climate science is communicated to agricultural audiences, both facilitators of how we can more effectively communicate it and barriers of their perceptions of what is stopping effective communication. So three themes that I'm going to highlight today, the first being bridging climate science for agriculture, second, focusing on precise terminology, and three, utilizing frames of risk management. And I'm going to provide some illustrative quotations from the climatologists that exemplify each of these themes. So the first being bridging climate science for agriculture. So those of us in this room are very aware of the UTU and also the Sustainable Corn Cropping System Coordinated Agricultural Projects are both very large-scale, interdisciplinary, USDA, National Institute of Food and Agriculture, funded research, extension, and education projects. So the scope of these projects is not only providing information, but also conveying that information to the people who need it for decision-making. And currently, right now, these two projects are collaborating to develop a white paper on the social science and extension lessons learned that will help guide further extension and outreach programming in the region. So we know as society's needs changes and as science changes, we need to adapt how we convey and communicate that information to stakeholders. There's a lot of really great technical bulletins and reports that provide our current state of knowledge on this topic. The first I just wanted to mention is the USDA Technical Bulletin 1935, Climate Change in Agriculture in the United States, Effects and Adaptations. And that's a really good summary report that synthesizes our state of knowledge on the topic. And that provided the foundation for the agricultural portion of the third national climate assessment produced by the U.S. Global Change Research Program. So on the topic Bridging Climate Science for Agriculture, just knowing certified crop advisors and other key stakeholders have a really breadth of resources available, and so they shouldn't feel as though they're the only messenger conveying this information and should feel like they should, they can cite these sources to strengthen their message. Lastly here, also wanted to mention the newly created climate hubs, segmented by 7 regions. There's 10 hubs, and they are a great emerging resources that will be aggregating all this information and specifically tasked with conveying it to the agricultural audience. Some quotations that sort of illustrate this. The extension climatologist remarked, "Farmers know weather is the most important thing." So whether or not they believe, quote unquote, in climate change, they recognize that these environmental variables are extremely important to their farm enterprise and how they make decisions. And so they are receptive to learning about weather and climate science information. But a state climatologist remarked, you know, they're being careful to present the material in a scientific way rather than an advocacy way. Say, here's what the information is, here's what the limitations of that information are, rather than making the next step and say, all right, this is what you should do about it. So factually representing information in a non-biased way is how climatologists have perceived their role in communicating information. Second theme here is focusing on precise terminology. So we know global warming, climate change, these are all very politically contested phrases, and this is very recognized within the climatologist community. So one state climatologist remarked, "I usually just use the word climate rather than climate change or global warming. And the reason for that is climate, while it's more stable than weather, it's a long-term weather pattern. It's a changing pattern. It's not static. So talking climate change is kind of redundant." So arguably every single moment in time as we're gaining weather information, our future climate models and historical climate records are being updated to reflect that. Another state climatologist remarked, "One point I always try to make is that climate is always changing, whether caused by humans or not. And I think a lot of people just don't realize that. They think of nature itself as just kind of static, as kind of this museum piece that just doesn't change, and yet it's always changing." So one point to take away here is sometimes people feel uncomfortable using this phrase climate change because of these political connotations. And what I would recommend this data illustrates is that simply saying climate and applying climate science in how we communicate this message can be a very beneficial way to engaging these audiences who might be skeptical about climate change. Moving on to the third theme here, utilizing frames of risk management. So these frames are the context of the message, emphasizes the dual benefits of producer adaptation to reduce risks and mitigate hazards. And so you can think of two ways to communicate a climate science message for a producer. You can think of, well, climate change is happening and it's this terrible global thing that's going to cause all these catastrophes, so therefore you need to adapt your farm enterprise. Or it can be conveyed in, well, climate change is happening and could potentially have all these negative benefits on your farm enterprise. Therefore, by adapting, you can actually secure profitability and resilience on your farm scale. Likewise, the dual benefits of global mitigation of these climate change hazards. So extension climatologists remarked, we need to have observations, we need to have better forecasts, we need to have satellites. Those are all things that are not controversial. The things we need to have to protect our citizenry and protect our economic livelihood. But when they become attached to climate by any stretch, sometimes they become controversial. And so a regional climatologist sort of extended on this and recommend, talk about it through hazard mitigation or early warning systems for extreme events. That's the kind of thing that we need to have to, we need to move towards in terms of alerting the public or a particular sector that big things are coming or may be coming or may be more frequent than they used to be. So that's actually a way into perhaps changing not only perceptions, but also changing decisions. So these quotations sort of illustrate in ways that we can frame climate science information for reducing risks and mitigating hazards, both globally, but also within the farm enterprise at the field level scale. This slide here just sort of visually represents some of the statistical data that we've gained from the surveys of the two projects. And on these websites in the bottom, you can click on both the Statistical Atlas 1 and 2 to learn more about many different variables that were in the surveys. And this is just one that I think is pretty neat. Coming in 2012, right off of 5 years of extremely wet conditions, asking farmers about their concerns for more frequent extreme rains. And as you can see, the concern is geographically representative. The part lower Michigan and Ohio that historically receives much more rain, the farmers are reportedly more concerned than in Nebraska, areas that have historically received less rain. And so when we're communicating these messages to farmer, recognizing that these biophysical feedbacks and geographical characteristics are important in how they perceive or are concerned about effects of climate. And here are some publications from my thesis work regarding the climatologist surveys and interviews if you're interested in learning more. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your time and open it up to questions. Yes. That is a very good question, and that's something we've talked about extensively. I'll just answer personally, and I believe that it can be disconnected. I think those are two separate conversations. I think what we're working towards now as in decision support tools is, you know, providing profitability and resilience of farm enterprise management so people can keep farming, keep producing food. The global connotations of climate change and anthropogenic causes and those types of things do definitely play into the conversation. But as we're working to engage agricultural stakeholders, I believe there's different frames that we can emphasize first just to engage that conversation and then potentially moving forward, bringing those components in. But thank you for that question. Yeah, definitely. There was. So this was in. Yeah. So one thing I'll remark: this interviews of climatologists occurred right prior to the drought of 2012. So this was in the spring in March, right as things were warming up. And so I think that the drought of 2012 was sort of this signal moment in a lot of ways. And so it's been interesting to interact and talk with the climatologists after that and also the agricultural stakeholders and how that drought may have maybe influencing decisions, but maybe not. And so it's kind of interesting to see how these biophysical feedbacks play and also the geographical differences. You know, speaking with people from Nebraska, they're essentially talking a different language from people from Michigan and Ohio in terms of precipitation and how that resonates with decisions. So essentially the geographical variation was very surprising. Yeah. All right, thank you.